welcome to the first episode of Girls Will Be Ghouls. I'm Zena Dixon from RealQueenOfHorror.com, and I'm here with Ashley Blackwell from GraveyardShiftSisters.com. Today we decided to start up an awesome podcast so we can discuss our love for horror and discuss the things that we don't like or don't care about. Ashley, how are you doing today?
Hi everyone, I am excited to be here. This is going to be great. I'm doing great.
Okay.
How are you?
Oh, you know, I'm good. I'm excited. My palms are sweaty, but we're going to dive right into it. So this first episode, what we're going to be talking about, my top least favorite horror films from 2014. I know that everybody was doing a list of their favorites and, you know, all that stuff, but I want to talk about what I don't like. That's number one. Other thing is we decided to go back to a movie that was made back in 2001 that a lot of people seem to either forgot about or hated it. It starred Snoop Dogg, Pam Grier, and that is Bones. Before we dive into that, I'm gonna just jump into my least favorite horrors. The first one on my list, which is also featured on RealQueenOfHorror.com, the movie Animal. I know that I was talking about it on Twitter, and I can't really seem to come across anyone who have seen it or anyone who got as aggravated with the film as I did.
I definitely didn't get as aggravated as you. I tried to see the good in it, right. But I agree from reading your list, it is a relatively forgettable film.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
It was completely crazy to me. When I saw the trailer for it, I thought it was pretty awesome. You know, mm-hmm. I was looking forward to it. You know, I love creature movies, and that's pretty much what it was. But as the movie just continued on, I realized, like, wow, I'm really, like, wasting my life away. I'm going to give out a spoiler. This is a spoiler alert. So if you do want to see this film, maybe you should skip it. I don't know. Do you mind if I give a little smidge of a spoiler?
No, but don't give away the ending.
Okay, no, I won't do that. In the beginning of the film, it kind of starts off backwards. Mm-hmm. So you kind of think, like, you know, when you first watch a film and they start from a part in the movie, like the middle of the movie, and you're expecting to see that part eventually, mm-hmm. but as, you know, you're watching the film and it's about an hour and 20 minutes into the film and that part still has not, you know, come up or anything, that's when, you know, I realized, like, okay, well, somebody made, like, a big whammy, because that particular part was not in the film at all. So
yeah, I would agree. I would just say that was pretty disappointing about it. You know, thinking back on it more so, I think if the film focused on the core group of people and right. nothing else, there was no kind of pre-intro scene before the credits rolled, mm-hmm. it would have been better. Like, if they just focused on that and focused on the group of kids and their survival, that would have made more sense. And a little bit more, delving a little bit more deeper into who these kids are in the face of what's going on. Right. Like, you know, if you're just going to do, you can't, if it was just more of a simple creature film with young, pretty kids, it would have been more effective.
Right. You know, I'm sorry. Something I was just thinking about was, I remember telling you about this, was, you know, actress Kiki Palmer.
Oh, God.
Was.
I didn't even watch it because I'm just like, I can't, no.
I know, but I was.
Black people always want to be extra with everything.
Yes, it was like, okay, when I saw that she was going to be in the movie, I was like, cool, you know, I didn't have an issue with that. I was actually looking forward to it. She's also a singer, and she did a music video for this horror film. Did you ever watch it? Like,
I probably should just to laugh, but I just never got around to it.
I know.
Like, it's just, the just sounds so silly.
It was. I was so exhausted after watching it because it made no sense. Like, you know, why she was doing a music video. Like, it had nothing to do with the, like, the film. Like, nothing at all. She was just dirty and her hair was, like, purposely, like, fondled with and messed up, and she was wearing no pants, and she was just singing and screaming at the top of her lungs, animal, you know. And it's just like, what does that have to do with the movie, dear. You know, she was on a bed, I don't know. So that really did add to it being on this list, because if she would have just left it alone and, you know, didn't do a music video, like, I wonder whose idea was it. Like, I think it was hers.
Yeah, I was gonna say, why did her people let her do a... Why did her people think it was a good idea that this film needed a video?
Like, I don't know.
I mean, I think the guys behind it, like, one of the guys behind it is I think partially responsible for, like, the Nightmare on Elm Street documentary. Right. And he is definitely, was a big part in putting together the Never Sleep Again book. So, you know, with the whole Freddy connection, I was like, yes, you know, this guy knows what he's doing. He's got some good ideas. I forget exactly who... Let's see, off the top of my head, who the guy was who I think wrote and directed. Let me look it up real quick.
No problem.
For folks to see here. Okay, so, yeah, Animal came out in 2014, like Dina said. And it was, yeah, it was directed by Brett Simmons and Tommy Hudson. Okay. Is the Freddy guy. And then Catherine Trillo was also the other writer.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I think Brett is... What else did Brett do?
Oh, he did... There's this movie on Netflix I've been meaning to watch called Monkey's Paw.
Okay.
I haven't watched it yet, so I'm not too sure if there's a music video for that one too, but
probably not.
I hope not. But, you know, moving on, Kiki, you tried, girl. So, I mean, she really did. Okay, moving on. The other film was, I'm not too sure even how to pronounce it. Maybe I should have, like, Googled it. You know, I'm always mispronouncing things anyway. This movie is Ouija. Or Ouija. Yeah. Okay, good. So, pretty much, I'm sorry. Whenever I tell people about this, you know, it's like people forget about this movie. And that's pretty much what it was. It was forgettable. But while I was watching, I barely remember what happened during the film. So that's another big issue, I feel. Like, it's like I do remember that I thought everything was predictable. Like, I feel like if you just watch the first 10 minutes of the film, you will be able to tell what is going to happen throughout the next part.
And see, that's why I didn't get to see this one. I don't remember which came out first, Annabelle or Ouija, but I was so disappointed with Annabelle that I was just like, I'm not seeing any more Hollywood
horror
for the rest of the year. And it was in October, but still, like, I was just like, eh, it's just, and then I heard about Ouija, and then, you know, I was listening to another podcast talk about it extensively, so I was given all the spoilers, so I was just like, well, that doesn't sound very interesting, so it's like, just, why bother?
It wasn't, like, it wasn't scary, obviously. There wasn't really anything new about it. I guess the only thing that I can think of that was really great about the film is when the ending credits came up, because you knew you were free of the movie. Like, that's the only thing I can think of. And, you know, it really sucks because the whole Ouija board thing, it has, like, a creepy kind of feel to it. So it's like it could have been amazing, I felt, if done correctly. But yeah, it was predictable. It was the typical teenage drama mixed into it. Just a waste. I'm so glad I didn't go to the theaters to see it. So that one. Annabelle is actually on my list as well. So I guess we can start talking about that one. I know. Why didn't you like the film?
I wanted an actual doll possession film. I wanted a meatier backstory as to why this doll. What I liked about the the catch of it in The Conjuring, so to speak, is the fact that it felt mysterious. And then when I did a little bit of research about Lorraine Warren and her investigation of the doll, I like the idea of there being no explanation.
Right.
This doll is just inhabited by an evil spirit. Mm-hmm. An evil spirit who's never walked this planet, who needs a conduit to possess a human being. That's, to me, that is absolutely terrifying. And for Annabelle to just make it just this Manson family thing where the doll's not really possessed, and it was just so weird. And it was convoluted, but it was not. It was just stupid to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said it before on social media. I hate that Alfred Woodard was the white savior, black woman.
Oh, God.
And I'm only alive because I need to save this white Barbie and Ken,
right?
And their baby. And I'm like, no, that's just wrong.
No, you're right. I thought that was the most ridiculous thing I've seen of 2014. And it's like, I feel like I've seen a lot of things that was just horrible. But for this one, it's like, I kind of felt like an idiot, because when I first heard that there was going to be an Annabelle doll movie, oh my gosh, like I was about to lose my mind, because I was really looking forward to it. Like you said, they did make her seem very mysterious and all those things. But you know what? It was like, the film wasn't even about the doll. Like,
right.
The doll was barely in it. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I can name two parts in the film that really had me like, oh my God. Like, if that ever happened to me, I'd probably just have a heart attack and die.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
The whole ending, like you said, about with her, well, I won't tell how she died, but just how she was like their savior. Mm-hmm. That didn't make any sense to me. Like,
no.
What? Like, when, at first, it took me some time. Like, I had to, like, really sit back and think about it, because that made no sense at all. Like, oh, I know what my purpose is. It's to save your life.
You're right. It was frustrating. The only reason I saw this was because I was in Seattle with a friend of mine, and we were just kind of killing time before our flight. So I was just like, let's go see a movie. And I wish I would have just held on to my $12, because we should have just done something.
Yeah.
Else, like, sit in a park or something. But I really, really, really didn't want to see it. It's like, you know, that's the thing about, you know, anything in life, you take those risks, and you either lose money or, you know, I don't, yeah. It's, that was a risk.
Yeah.
And it didn't pay off.
It didn't. It didn't. So it's like, it really hurt my life. Like, I don't understand. Like, I just feel, I really do. I feel like a clown, because I was like egging this movie on. I always posted up on Real Queen of Horror, like, hey guys, this is coming out, you know? And,
mm-hmm.
And then when I went to go see the movie, and, you know, I was just so embarrassed. I was embarrassed, like, I made the movie and everybody booed me, but it was just hurtful. But unfortunately, just for me, I just wanted to see more of the doll.
The other thing I never liked, even in The Conjuring, was how they made the doll kind of look terrifying. It's the whole idea of just kind of overdoing things.
Right.
When you look at the actual doll that's really based on it,
mm-hmm.
it's a regular ass Raggedy Ann, and I think that. I don't know. That's kind of spooky. That's spookier to me, because.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like a doll that you're supposed to be afraid of. It
right.
looks like a regular doll. So
right.
It's like, wait,
that's
this
true.
Doll is. Attached to an evil, like, you know what I mean, like, that it's just so unnerving. So I don't think I'll ever look at another Raggedy Ann doll the same.
That's true. I think
so,
that they should have left it just as it was.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know what, the doll in the movie was so ugly, so it's just like, I don't understand who would be attracted to buy it. Like, I would never buy that.
Yeah, that was another thing, because the guy bought this doll for his wife, and she's doting on it. And I'm just like, really? Because it's kind of ugly.
Yeah.
I mean, we just have different tastes, I guess.
No, it was ugly. So, and, you know, speaking of her husband, like, he was so oblivious. Like, all these outrageous things are happening. And, you know, he's always at work. He's forever working. He's never home. And then with his wife and how all these crazy things are happening, I don't know how she was able just to, you know, stay in one spot.
A lot of people, especially in reviews, were just kind of saying, like, the two main characters were kind of lackluster. Like, they weren't even very,
mm-hmm.
like, intriguing. And I guess because it harkens to, like, the things that you're talking about, like, the things that they did in the film, you're kind of scratching your head the whole time, like, what? Like, right. Why do you think this is plausible? So.
I don't know. Let's just move on. Because I feel like we just both keep on saying, I don't know. Because.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Another film that was on my list of the top five least favorite horror films from 2014 for me was the movie Tusk. I don't know if you've seen this one. I do know that it's not a film for everyone. I know that, you know, just like Human Centipede. But this film, it really just wasn't for me whatsoever. It was directed by Kevin Smith, and I really like him. And it stars Justin Long, and I like him as well. But with this film, I don't know. I think it was supposed to be kind of like a comedy horror, but okay, but it's not funny and it's not scary. So it's like I really don't see why I need it in my life or why I even watched it, you know?
Yeah, I haven't seen this one yet. I think I've gotten to the point where if I can avoid paying extra for a film, I will wait for Netflix Instant because I'm just too damn cheap. But it seems like just hearing other people, this is why I love, you know, you guys in the horror community, because you talk about films and you kind of inform where kind of the rankings of films I should put on my watch list. And I know for Tusk, I think I've heard mixed relatively. Like, I haven't heard anyone love or rave about it, but I've heard people say they like it, they enjoyed it, but I've also heard a lot of people say this movie is it just sucks.
Yeah. So I mean, he tried, and it's like, I hate to say that it sucks because it's made by Kevin Smith, but mm-hmm. it wasn't for me. That's a nice way of putting it. That's all. So if you ever do get a chance to watch it, I say don't, because there's no point in doing it unless you have absolutely nothing to do for some reason. I mean, nothing.
It's what I usually do. Well, what I usually do right before bed is I'll put on a movie, and I usually put on movies that I've seen before and want to see again. But also at the same time, I also, you know, dare myself, can I stay awake if I really want to see this film?
Right.
So, or if I'm in the middle about a film where I'm not thirsty to see it, but at the same time, I'm not completely against seeing it. So a movie like Tusk is something I would put on right before bed. And like, for example, movies that have kept my attention where I've been dog tired, I think, you know, not even horror, but like, you know, Pulp Fiction was one of those movies that I just recently seen, not too long ago. Yes, I was very late to the party, but I was just like so, like, and I was tired that day, and I was lying in bed, and I was watching it, and I watched that whole movie all the way through. I'm like, this is the bomb. Why have I not seen this movie ever? I totally slept on that movie. But that's kind of like sometimes those are how my viewing habits go, and I think Tusk is probably going to be that movie. Can it keep me awake? That's going to be the barometer for it.
Well, you let me know, because that's I'm looking forward to hearing if it keeps you awake or not.
Definitely.
Okay, so the last one that's on the list, the movie Nurse 3D. I remember when I first started hearing about it, I first saw a trailer for it. I thought, you know, the trailer looked pretty cool. I wasn't, like, blown away by it, but I thought it looked pretty cool. And then I remember seeing, like, film posters for it. And, you know, I don't know if you ever done this, but back in the days when Blockbuster and all the video stores, they were hot, you know, instead of reading the back of a DVD to see if you wanted it or a VHS, I would just strictly go by the cover. And I thought that the film cover for this, you know, movie was really just cool. So once I watched it, and I remember hearing people raving about it, saying how it's so great. It has, like, the greatest characters, such great, you know, dialogue, all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know what? I'm in for a treat. I watched it, and I hated it. Like, and, you know, I know, like, people's like, oh, that's extreme, saying that you hate it. But no, I really did. Like, I was so disappointed. And I will never watch this movie again, like, ever again. And the main character, well, she's one of the main characters, I guess. She's played by, I forgot her name, but she's, I don't even know where she's from.
Paz de la Huerta.
Thank you. That's the one. She plays the character Abby Russell. And she's like the head nurse at this hospital. And she's supposed to come off like she's like this real sexy woman. And like guys just go completely bananas when they see her. And maybe they do. Like, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. So it's like, but it's like, I don't have a problem with, you know, saying like, hey, if a girl is attractive or not, but she just wasn't to me. She wasn't attractive and she wasn't sexy and she didn't come off like she was sexy. Like she came off like she had like issues, you know, like,
right.
I don't know. I don't know if she was trying too hard. I don't know who's her acting coach or what. And, you know, there was just, you know, as when, you know, when you watch horror films, something that I hate that a lot of horror films tend to do. Sometimes they'll overly add all these sexual tones into the movie. Like, why is she naked all the time? You know, why is she mm-hmm. talking like that? And it's like, or, you know, why is there so much blood? That blood is not necessary. And it's like, I'm all for the gore and blood. I really am. But there's a thin line where you can just get overly ridiculous. And it's like, I know, like, there's so many people who disagree with me as far as it goes with this movie, and they absolutely loved it, and, you know, they're gonna share it with their children's children, and, you know, what? That's I don't know, but you know how people, they get real like defensive about a movie that they absolutely love. But
true.
So it's like, I mean, you can love the movie. I'm not calling you names if you love a movie. It's just different tastes for different people, and this film was not my taste at all. So that's it.
Yeah, I didn't see it. One of my favorite podcasts is called The Horror. They actually, over the summer, they did a review on it, and you know, and they really dig in deep in horror films. They talk about it from their perspective in a real academic but also accessible way. And just from listening to that episode, I'm just like, do I really want to? Like, I haven't seen it. This one, I'm really not sure if I'm, you know, sold on actually checking out. Again, especially with horror films, I'm much more open to just watching, to just seeing anything. I've seen a Serbian film, so I can pretty much sit through anything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm definitely open to seeing it. But again, it's not high on my list, because, yeah, I'm hearing just, it doesn't sound like my kind of horror film to begin with. It just, I don't know. But, you know, I definitely do want to see it to kind of see what all the fuss is about. And I probably end up agreeing with you, because I feel like we're on a similar wavelength when it comes to films that we don't particularly care for.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You've been warned, I guess. But if you do get around to it, I wish you the best, and I hope that you love it, actually. Because if you do, maybe you can, you know, help me. I don't think you can, but maybe you can try to, you know?
I doubt it. Yeah, I know. Who knows? Who knows? I haven't seen the movie, so
okay. Just trying to be positive. So that's it for my top 5 least horror films from 2014. So now we're going to get into the discussion of 2001 Bones.
There's nothing but a dark world of pain locked in that building.
The last owner on the lease was back in 79. Some cat named Jimmy Bones.
Jimmy Bones?
Yeah, why? You heard of him?
This is the story of Jimmy Bones. Black as night, hard as stone.
It's the past, Patrick. It's dead.
Go play the deuce like the king of Siam. Got a switchblade loose and a diamond on his head. Dude, there's a switchblade and there's a diamond.
I don't think your past is dead, Pop. It's alive. Jimmy Bones, is that you? We killed you.
Oh my God!
Are you looking to score?
Little brother. I got a natural high. A supernatural high.
Bones from 2001, the synopsis says, over 20 years after his death by a gunshot, Jimmy Bones comes back as a ghost to wreak revenge on those who killed him and to clean up his neighborhood. This was directed by Ernest Dickerson, written by Adam Simon and Tim Metcalf. It's starring Snoop Dogg as Jimmy Bones, Pam Grier as Pearl, Michael T. Weiss as Lufovich, Clifton Powell as Jeremiah Peets, Ricky Harris as Eddie Mack, Bianca Lawson as Cynthia, Khalil Kane as Patrick, and Murren Mondesir as Bill. So, Zena, what did you think of Bones?
I love this movie. I love this movie so much. I recently found out that a lot of people hated it. You know, claiming, oh, it was cheesy, it was all these things. But it's just like, guys, there's a lot of other cheesy movies in the world, but you still adore them. So as far as it, you know, goes with this film, I absolutely loved it. Sure, Snoop Dogg's acting was a little sucky, but, you know, I mean, his acting is always a little sucky. That never really stopped us before from, you know, watching and enjoying a film. And plus, I felt like the whole storyline, it was made in 2001, so it's like, I felt like it was, of course, it's a little cheese, you know, but for me, I thought that it was refreshing because it was original.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I definitely look out for as far as it goes with horror movies these days, because it's hard to come by. And also, you know, I had no idea, but the girl from American Mary and
Female Yes, Evil 2, I'm sorry, it's Catherine Isabel. I'm so sorry.
No, yeah.
Say her name as well.
It's like she's in it, and it's just when I think back on it, it's like, wow, she was in a couple of horror films before she, you know, linked up with the Twisted Twins, so that's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as far as it goes with this movie, I really like it. Well, loved it a lot. I love the fact that he came back for revenge, and not everybody, but majority of the people in this film, they get it, you know. The only thing, the ending for me was a little like, what? But I'll let that slide. I'll let it go.
No, I got the ending. Like, okay, so I'm going to start off by being a bit contrary.
Okay.
I don't think this movie was cheesy at all. Despite what the director says, and Ernest does say that they were, you know, out to make like a straight, you know, horror film that was scary, that, you know, worked with a lot of different themes that we'll get into later. But I thought the movie was a great straight horror film. And I don't know, I don't want to make assumptions, but I tend to do it all the time. But, you know, are people, you know, harping on the fact that it's quote subpar or cheesy because it's a primarily black cast? Because, I mean, this is one of the best, if we're talking black horror films, this is one of the better ones, especially coming out of the 90s, because there were some really bad, quote, urban horror films, man.
Right,
and,
right.
Like, and this, and Bones stands on its own, it stands apart, it stands very, very high. You can't even really compare Bones to those movies. I mean, you can in tone and in theme, but you can't, you know, if you're talking quality, if you're talking, I mean, Pam Grier is in this movie, for crying out loud. And Pam Grier, let's be real, she's no slouch. She's not going to take a film that she doesn't think is good.
Right.
And even me, on the contrary, I'm going to also say is that I thought Snoop Dogg was Snoop Dogg, and I thought this movie worked for him. I knew prior to watching this movie for the first time that he was a horror fan himself. You know,
mm-hmm.
I know he has Hood of Horror and all that. Now that's cheesy, his Hood of Horror type stuff and everything like that. But I knew he was a fan of the genre, and I knew, you know, even in if you watch the documentaries on Bones, so like he took his character seriously and the approach of it real seriously. I think he was just he played straight him, but he played like the dudes he knew on his block who
right.
were like that, you know. And so I thought it just really, really worked well. And you're right, it's an extremely original. It's original, but you know, it's like any form of art. It kind of takes bits and pieces from other aspects of you know life experiences and also other kind of stories and kind of creates something of its own.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really liked it. I am unapologetically.
No, that's understandable. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I didn't think it was cheesy because it was an all black cast.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was cheesy because of his acting. I'm sorry. it was because of his acting. And then he did have some cheesy lines that rhymed and made no sense. And I'm trying to figure it out. And then I'm missing parts because I'm sitting there trying to figure it out. But I did love it. I love the movie. And what I find kind of sad about it is, you know, and I know like I'm, you know, always getting upset about people, you know, making remakes and stuff, but it's just like, okay, honestly, if this film was supposed to be rebooted, remade,
no,
I know you're like, no, but I would be for it because I feel like it had such a good storyline. And plus, come on, it's like 2001, like, this makes me sound old, but All right, back in 2001, I think I was like 14. So
you ain't old.
Okay, but it just felt like it was a long time ago. And so even with, okay, come on. I know that you remember the party scene and when people were dancing, it's just like, what is she doing? What is she wearing? And, you know, especially when Bianca Lawson came in and she's just wearing like rubber or leather or whatever that was. And I'm just like, oh my God. So it's like, I'm not saying that, you know, obviously it doesn't really seem like anybody's going to do it, but if they were supposed to do it, I would be for it, and I would definitely want to watch it.
Because it doesn't need it.
It doesn't.
It would benefit from a sequel, not a remake.
Okay, a sequel. I can do a sequel. And, you know, all right, well, this is going to be like a spoiler. I was going to tell you this when we had a little break time, but, you know, Pam Grier's character, Pearl, with her being in love with Jimmy Bones and stuff. And, you know, I don't understand, like, why didn't she just be with him, you know?
Spoilers, everyone. When they were in the City of the Dead, well, I mean, because...
Come on.
If you're alive, you really...
Think about it.
I was just gonna say, if you're looking at it from her vantage point, like she's a clairvoyant, like she can see things, and if you kind of have that gift of sight kind of a thing going on, you know, you see things, you feel and see things differently than people who don't have it. So I mean, you know, death is nothing. In this universe that they're in this movie, death is not something that's desirable or something enticing. I mean, right. Even Jimmy himself coming back was in a way for him to kind of get wanting the life back that he, you know, was taken from him. So even he says it to the one guy, what's his name? Clifton Powell's character, Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. And he says to him, like, can you give me my life back? Because that's what he wanted. He wanted his life. That's why that whole sequence with him and Pam and giving her the dress and her putting back on the dress, he wanted his life back.
Yeah.
So there was nothing desirable about death. There's nothing enticing about it. And she realized that. She was just like, this. If I'm alive, this isn't natural. This isn't the natural way. I understand that there is life and there is death, but this is not an organic process for me. I can't, forcing death or just walking into, you know, a very unsavory, unnatural situation was just not something she knew wasn't right. Mm-hmm. So she felt like his spirit was just kind of a drain on, you know, it was a drain on her. She didn't even tell Cynthia, Bianca Lawson's character, she didn't even tell her who her father was until all of the madness started to happen. So
right.
It was like a secret. It was like weighing on her. And for the ending to happen the way it happened, that was sad. That was sad the way things kind of ended up. But, you know, she felt that was a necessary thing. Because that was kind of a foreshadow from earlier, because... during the flashback sequence, like, she wasn't going to stab him. She was just going to kill herself. So, in a way, it's kind of that conflict and complex struggle. Like, she wanted to be with him because she was going to kill herself back in the day, but he wouldn't let her.
Right.
And then, now in the present, she's kind of still working those themes of, you know, wanting to be with him, but cannot being with him. I'm not saying this right, but you get what I'm saying.
No, I do.
You know, it wasn't, you know, possible or the best plan. So that's just my explanation.
No, I mean, I understand that. It's just, you know, it just seemed like she never moved on. That's why I'm asking why. Like, she never moved on. Even like you said, she never told her daughter, Cynthia. She didn't tell her until things started happening. And I figured that she did that because she felt guilty. And obviously, he's come back for revenge and all this stuff. But, like... my thing is, since she didn't move on, and more of it that she couldn't move on, and now you have an opportunity to be with the love of your life again, sure, he's a little evil and he killed everybody, but you guys can be together again. You guys can be a family. You may live in the world of the undead, but he can make it look, you know, nice. Like, just how he helped her out with her outfit and all her, you know, her hair was gray and everything, so... I don't know. And, you know, this isn't the first time, obviously, where, you know, the villain or whatever is in love with, you know, a female, and then, you know, she's the good one, and like, it's not the first time that they didn't choose to be with the love of their lives. Like, I don't know if you remember Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Angela Bassett's character and Eddie Murphy. And once again, it's like, I don't understand why she didn't want to be with him. I mean, I guess because of, what was the guy's name who played Justice?
Her cop friend?
Right. With him, I think, fine. Like, maybe she wanted to be with him. I don't know, but it's like, sure, he's evil and he killed everybody, but it's like, you know, your mom was half of that, and now you have a friend, so, or you have somebody who understands. So I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like I'm a dark person at all, but it's just using Bones as an example.
If you're comparing those two, that's basically, these men are manipulative. Come on. Like, they are presenting, it's what they want. It's not what the women want. But, like, they're doing all the manipulating and showing them all the fancy stuff and, you know, being a Mac and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it doesn't feel autonomous for these women to just choose them. I mean, it's the easy approach, but, like, that would make a good movie if it was that easy, number one. And then number two, no. Look, these women have to make the sober decision to be with these men. And then I'd be like, okay. But no, especially Eddie Murphy. He did all the manipulation.
But it's like, what, her mom was a vampire or half of a vampire. So, I mean,
but she's still half human, which is why she was so conflicted about it. It was still, you know, it's still that struggle.
I mean,
it's still a conflict.
I guess, but I mean, you're already a vampire. You might as well. So just. But I get it. I really do. But as far as it goes with Bones, with Pam Grier's character, I just felt like it seemed like she couldn't move on. So in her case, that's where I'm a little confused about.
And that's why I think the ending was kind of her moving on. Like, she had, it's a very similar story, I think, in horror movies. It's about kind of, quote, facing your fears or facing the monster. She had to have that kind of reconciliation with him and the supernatural aspect of it. She had to have that in order to find her closure. Like,
right.
it wasn't about being with him, but it was really about, you know, kind of making sure his spirit could move on. Like, that was going to, you know, her facing it and her, you know, having those feelings again, it just made her realize, well, I guess she just had to kind of be the martyr and kind of take one for the team,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, make sure his spirit move on so he could, you know, stop, you know, wreaking havoc on folks. And also, you know, it had to be through her dress. It was very much in the cinematic, overly dramatic fashion. And I buy that because, you know, you watch enough films, you kind of, you know, some things you just kind of, you know, let go or whatever, and just kind of accept it and understand it as a part of, like, you know, the narrative. But so that's why I think it went down the way it did.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm.
I guess that makes sense.
I kind of wanted to talk about some of the themes that I kind of really liked about Bones. Also, on top of the love story, which I've written about before. But I really liked, like, a couple of the aspects of the film. Like, I like the idea that, again, if we're talking about kind of a black horror movie, and I've written and researched about this a lot. So, you know, black horror, especially, you know, this movie, I think Bones kind of harkens back to blaxploitation in a bit, but it also mm-hmm. kind of has a very modern feel. Like, the whole idea of drugs destroying the black neighborhoods. Like, you know, because Bones was just kind of running numbers, and he was kind of, that was his thing, but it wasn't about, but he didn't want those hard drugs in his community.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, he wanted his community to thrive. He wanted to see children playing outside and black folks owning their own businesses and things like that. So it had a very communal feel.
Yeah.
And then when you get these two knuckleheads who come in and want to bring crack, actually. They wanted to bring crack in the community. He was like, I'm not having it. And that's
mm-hmm.
where, you know, just things went haywire. So I kind of like that idea because they were kind of talking, because it very much mirrors real life. and the way that kind of those drugs destroyed our community. I talked to my mother a lot. My mother's a child of the 70s. Like, she was born in 62. Mm-hmm. And she always kind of, and a lot, you'll hear it from a lot of people her age. They were like, yeah, crack destroyed our communities. Jeez. Point blank, period. And because she saw it, she grew up. She was like, yeah, everyone was doing weed in the 70s. But then, you know, and there was a few people here and there doing the hard stuff. But when crack hit, I mean, it's funny. Her last high school reunion, she told me half of the people she graduated with are dead from drugs.
Oh, my God. You know,
half. So it's I really liked how it kind of really kind of mirrored real life in that way. That was one of the things I liked. If we're still on the black stuff, we're talking about kind of class struggles. So you had Bones, who was like, I'm about my community. Mm-hmm. I want my community to thrive. But then his friend, Jeremiah was about upward mobility. And think about it. So when you first see some of you know how they introduce things with title features at the bottom or on the screen. So 1979, right? So 1979 is kind of that turning point, right? It was like right before you get to the 80s. So what do you think of when you think of like 1980s, especially like 1980s black people, black culture, blackness? So you think of like the Cosby Show.
Mm-hmm.
You think you think of like the stupid Ronald Reagan with his ghetto queen story that somebody in the White House told him to tell about, you know, how black women just want to have 10 babies live off of welfare. So, you know, so the idea, there's this kind of like this bootstrapping idea mentality that, oh, if black people just work hard, we can be like Cliff and Claire Huxtable, and, mm-hmm. you know, we just need to be better, we just need to be pull our pants up. You still hear this today, and I think like Clifton kind of had that idea, like he didn't want to stay in the neighborhood. He was just like, no, he wanted the big house, the big side of town. He wanted the white woman, which is another thing I'm going to talk about as a theme.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. So, yeah, I thought it was really interesting that these two kind of had that struggle. It was like, you know, the idea of, you know, this guy who wanted more, who wanted better, who wanted to move out of the hood, and the guy who wanted to stay in the hood but make the hood better. So I thought those were really interesting. If we're talking about, quote, a black horror film that's working with kind of like ideas that are very intimate to the black mm-hmm. community, I thought those were really cool things that they kind of put in.
Nope, you're definitely right. I've never really thought of it that way, especially with Jeremiah's character.
Mm.
Because I noticed it and I was just thinking, okay, well, I guess he got what he wanted. You know, he got the house, he got mm-hmm. the woman.
Because these are things I think about a lot when I look at these films, and yeah, like the whole white woman thing. Can we talk about the gender aspects of the film of just for a second?
Of course.
Because white women in this movie, were status symbols. Status symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear the thug dude Eddie? He called his girlfriend or whatever she was supposed to be a Marilyn Monroe. Yep.
He has a Marilyn Monroe ho. Yes.
I laughed, but I'm like, that's just not right.
I laugh too, but it's just, I mean, I guess that's the goal. That's how you know that you made it. Like, that's what it seems like.
Yeah, because now he runs the neighborhood and he's got people making his money by selling drugs or whatever. And the same thing with Jeremiah. He's got, you know, he's got his affluence now in the suburbs, but he's got his white wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of it. Let's be honest, you know. So I didn't, you know, that was sad. You know, white women were just that was their place in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That Catherine Isabel. I don't know how I would describe her. I never even really thought about her character. She would just seem like she was kind of a part of, like, the group of young kids.
Right. She did. Okay, I know I keep on bringing up this party scene, but I remember during the party scene, like, there really, I didn't see any, like, black girls. Like, except for three. Obviously, Bianca Lawson.
Mm-hmm.
Pam Grier. I mean, she's a woman. Black woman. And the one that killed, what was his name? Okay, the gosh, that's a spoiler. God, I have such a big mouth.
I mean, yeah, let's just, I'm going to put it in the show notes that this is just going to be nothing but spoilers.
Okay. Because, yeah. But okay, you understand. You know who I'm...
Because you can't have a discussion about a film without spoiling it. For the most part.
It's so hard. Like, I mean, maybe I should actually think about it before I open up my mouth. But no, I feel like I have to.
I think we should just make a steadfast rule. If it's a newer movie that we're seeing, then we should probably... We probably will have a non-spoiler discussion and a spoiler discussion.
Okay.
But since it's 2001 and Bones, you can find it online.
Yes, you can.
Go watch it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, all right. When Maurice's character, Maurice, that was his name, obviously. Mm-hmm. When he was killed by the dog, which was Jimmy Bones. Spirit or something.
Yeah, I was confused about that too. I feel like the dog was, I don't know if it was his spirit. Okay, that part was cheesy with the dog when
it was.
Now that was, I would totally give you that. It was totally cheesy, and I was just like, come on, y'all.
Do you remember like the what dog he was saying? Was
kind of a medium. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the dog. Yeah, I don't know if it was fully his spirit because the dog needed something. In order, it needed the food, and it needed to kill someone. In order, it needed a human sacrifice, so to speak, in order to bring Bones back to life. Because if it was just Bones, and he could just kind of transform from a dog to his physical self, I don't know. But
yeah, why didn't he do it a long time ago? But okay. Yeah. Well, okay, whatever it was, when the dog, before it was a dog, it was a black woman. So during the party, that's it. I didn't really see any other black girls, like, at all. So, I mean...
Maybe that's another way of saying... Maybe that's another way of talking about gentrification.
Maybe,
I just thought about that. Maybe that's another... Because, you know, you got this... You got... I mean, he's... I don't know if his character... What was his name again? Patrick? I don't know if he was supposed to be mixed or not. I don't know if his mom was supposed to be white. No, stepmom is white. But
I don't know.
Was white. But he still comes from this, like, neighborhood where he's got, he comes from privilege, and he buys this building in this very not-so-privileged neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're buying, you know, seeing it as an opportunity, you know, it's the same, like, gentrification kind of a spiel that you kind of, like, you know, any topical knowledge you have of urban renewal, like, that's the kind of things you hear. People want to make the neighborhood better. People mm-hmm. with money want to come in and bring their money in, make stuff all nice, and then as soon as you know it, you have a Starbucks down the street, and you're like, where's the corner store? Like, and so...
That's how you know you made it in life. There's a Starbucks down the street. So
yeah, exactly. I just now thought of that idea. I'm like, well, maybe that's what it's kind of talking about. Because if you don't see a lot of black people...
But I don't know. I wasn't purposely trying to just, you know, count all the black girls on my hand. It's just something mm-hmm. that I noticed. And I usually do notice, you know, with films that I do watch. As far as it goes with, like, recommendation, would you recommend this movie?
Definitely. I would definitely recommend this movie. As with any movie, there's no guarantee that everyone's going to like it.
Right.
But definitely give it a shot. I tell people this a lot when I'm talking, when people ask me to kind of talk about horror. I say, you know, really give some credence to horror films with predominantly casts of color. And not just, you know, I'm talking about, you know, Mexican films as
right.
well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, J-horror, you know, or other Korean horror, which is some intense
oh,
stuff.
God,
you know?
Korean horror will make
yeah.
you lose your mind.
So check out these movies. It's not, you know, we have to, my whole purpose, I guess I would say, is to really shift the narrative of how we view horror, especially in regards to race, culture, and ethnicity, that there's mm-hmm. so much more than, you know, pretty blonde girls running in the woods.
Definitely.
From serial killers.
Definitely. No, you're absolutely right. I feel like, when was the last time that there was a horror movie released in theaters that wasn't just like an all white cast? When was the last time that you've seen, or if you ever seen?
A wide release? Mm-hmm. I don't really know. Maybe Bones.
I think it was Bones. The only thing I can think of is Bones and honestly Vampire in Brooklyn.
Wow.
That's it. Like, that is
it. It's well over 10 years ago, too.
Yep. So it's like, I don't know. It's so sad.
So before we get into our rating system, would you recommend it?
I would definitely recommend it. I would recommend it if you would like to see something original. If you would like to see something that doesn't have the typical formula of horror movies, definitely if you are a fan of like those revenge kind of ghost films, I would recommend it. I would recommend it to all, not even just horror films, just to all, if you want to see something new.
Yep. So I came up with, and Zena, I believe, is also on board with this. It's a rating system that I kind of created. It's something I wanted to do something different than what other horror podcasts are doing. And I think it is pretty amusing, if I do say so myself. It's called the Minority Report. And it is a rating system from 1 to 5, 1 being the lowest and 5 being the highest. So basically, the Minority Report assesses both a horror film's number of characters of color and their significance in each film, and kind of also the themes of the film, like, you know, how does it feel culturally, I guess, so to speak. So starting from 5 being the highest, Black Earth and Blackula, which is basically a horror film with an almost or all entirely black cast that commonly deals with issues within the African diaspora. Number 4 is Demon Knight, Jada Pinkett, a horror film with an almost even cast of diverse characters where a character of color has their own story or takes on a significant leadership role and can in the end be victorious or the survivor. 3 is Sleepy Hollow Season 2, which is a horror film with a relatively mixed cast with a lot of promise, but instead would rather regulate characters of color to supporting or background roles while the white main characters are the main focus. 2 is The Kincaid Token Factor.
That one's my favorite. Sorry.
Kincaid is the sole black man from the Nightmare on Elm Street series, Part 3 and 4, respectively. This is a horror film that is like, oh, let's add in a black character because we forgot one. We should just add one just because we want to hear people's mouths. And that's the one character that is usually there to help the main white characters and doesn't necessarily die first, but does probably eventually die, most likely most of the time. And 1 should not be a surprise to anyone, especially nowadays, is whiter than the 2015 Oscars. That means this is a horror film which is nothing but pale faces, no blackness, no brownness, no nothing. And Zena, so with our Minority Report for Bones, what is your rating?
Okay, I'm going to give it a 4. Demon Knight, Jada Pinkett. I know it wasn't fully evenly mixed in there, but they tried. They really did. They tried. So I'm going to give them that. I feel good about this decision that I made.
I was done. I'm going to give it a 5. I'm going to give it a Blacker than Blackula. From the beginning, where you hear Snoop Dogg do his own rendition of Payback by James Brown, to everything about the movie felt so kind of 70s cool, but with a 21st century twist, and it's Snoop Dogg, and it's Pam Grier, and it's just, and the language of the movie, the tone, everything, it just felt so kind of, it gave it kind of this kind of black horror cool that it felt refreshing, especially because, right, you know, I love the 70s films, but, you know, as I was born in 82, so to see something that kind of spoke to people of my generation, whether you like the movie or not, you should like the movie, but I really liked it, and I think, you know, again, thinking about the themes of the film and thinking about the cast, I thought it really did a good job kind of, you know, giving it a voice in black cinema, having it be a part of black cinema, and I really wish that more people would recognize it as a as a part of it. You know, again, I think this is one of the reasons why we started this podcast. Horror does not get the respect it deserves. This is no secret.
Right.
And black horror is still fighting tooth and nail for it. So
that's true. I mean, sometimes in some ways I wonder if people feel like black horror doesn't exist just more of that it doesn't matter. Because when I think about horror films that have black people in it, people always think that it's a joke, or they think that it was bad, or they think that it's this and that. And sometimes they really don't even have good reasons as to why they feel that way. At least that's what I've noticed. Maybe I'm wrong about it. But that's what I've came across. And even with Snoop Dogg's character, as far as it goes with Jimmy Bones, I really, really loved his character.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that he was an awesome villain and definitely one of a kind. And I feel like this movie should be a sequel. Should be something. There should definitely be a sequel, especially it's been years. So, I mean, I need a sequel. I mean, somebody should be listening. And
I was thinking that, too. It was one of the things when I started to write about this film, I wanted to kind of talk about the aspects of it needing a sequel. It didn't fit at the time, but it feels necessary because there's still, you know, the end kind of shows you that he's, you know, first of all, you can't really kill a spirit.
Right.
You know, in my kind of opinion or kind of ideology, you can't kill a spirit. So he still lingers. Mm-hmm. And his connection to, you know, the physical world is still very apparent within his daughter, because Cynthia is still alive at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's that. I forget what I was going to say, but we can keep going.
It's okay. But, I mean, I thought of that, and I just thought about his character and how his character was really just awesome. And, I mean, I noticed, just using Blade as an example. Everybody loves, majority of people that I come across, they love the character Blade. But Blade is also a mixture of action. There's some action in there. It's not full-on horror for me. I know it has the whole vampire thing going on. So it's I don't know if I should even count that one. I just want, people just to, of course, respect the horror genre, but also to give films like this that has black people in it or people of color in it, just give it a chance. Even with as far as it goes with Halloween Resurrection, Busta Rhymes' character was cheesy and he had stupid lines, but I mean, it wasn't too terrible. People say that it's I remember I read this list, I think it was from Bloody Disgusting, it was a list or just some kind of article where, you know, they was just remembering when Busta Rhymes embarrassed himself and met Michael Myers, and they put a clip with it, and, you know, just basically making fun of his cheesy lines. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but overall he didn't do too bad. I mean, I don't know.
He played the character he was supposed to play.
Right.
I think that could have easily been a white character. I don't know. I mean, you can't, and I've heard a lot of things about this film, but when it comes down to it, everything that I've pretty much heard, people have fun with the movie. It's not, you know, you gotta when you watch that movie, you gotta think to yourself, you have to have fun with it, because it is not meant to be taken seriously.
Right,
in the Halloween franchise. It's just, because I'm sorry, I was cracking up laughing when I first saw it. I'm like, is Busta Rhymes for real? And then you just have fun with it. Because he's just being funny.
Right.
At a certain point. And he's this egotistical, you know, fame-hungry kind of a entrepreneur who comes up with this crazy idea to put a bunch of, you know, college students in, you know, the home of Michael Myers. And then, you know, things get bad. And then he does kung fu or something on Michael Myers. I mean, it's absurd. So you kind of have to just have fun with it.
I just wonder who thought it would be a good idea for him to do kung fu. I don't know.
Probably him.
It probably was. Are there things you wanted to share on Bones?
Nothing that feels relevant right now. But again, it's definitely a movie I recommend. And there's, you know, we didn't even touch the surface of, you know, the kind of themes that kind of run through it, but we've touched on the big ones, I feel like. So, you know, check it out for yourself. I love talking about horror. So if there's anything that you see in the movie that I haven't seen, you know, feel free to kind of holler at us, you know.
Mm-hmm. You can send us an email at girlswillbeghouls@gmail.com. Something I did want to tell you, just going off of the Bones topic, was this movie that I watched this week, which I thought I really liked it. I know I've heard from some people how they like hated it. But I don't know, because I remember I saw the movie trailer for it, and I also saw like the movie like poster for it, and I thought that the poster was really awesome. It came out sometime in 2014. It's kind of like a horror, but it's also a comedy and some drama in there. It's called Life After Beth. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
No, oh my God. Like, I really enjoyed it. Like, it's kind of sad, or maybe I'm just being overly sensitive. I don't know. But basically, it's about this guy where his girlfriend, she dies. I won't tell you how she dies. But she dies. And somehow, she just comes back to life. And as time goes on, you know, I mean, he's happy at first, because I think, you know, like their relationship they were struggling, and maybe they was on the verge of breaking up before she died. But then I guess he felt bad afterwards when she died, and he would go over to her parents' place and spend time with them. But then one day he tries to go over to their house and nobody's answering the door, and he's looking through the windows, and then he looks in and he sees her her walking away. Mm-hmm. From behind. So he starts, you know, screaming out her name and banging on the windows and everything. Fast forward, he basically finds out that she returned from the dead. And as time goes on, like, she's not the person who he remembered her to be. And it's a different type of, it's kind of like a zombie. It is a zombie, obviously, but it's a different kind of zombie kind of film. But I really liked it, and it's not what I thought. I mean, there were some things I don't really find it wasn't scary at all, but there were things that were definitely funny, and it's entertaining. But so if you're interested in seeing like it has that horror tone to it, with the whole zombie feel and coming back from the dead. But it's also a comedy with a little bit of romance and some drama in there. It's really awesome. The guy who's in it, who plays the boyfriend, I think his name, let me just look it up, is Dane DeHaan. Hopefully I'm saying his name right. He was in Chronicle. I really like that movie. I know some people hated it, but I thought it was awesome. So, so if you ever have a chance, like, you know, check it out. It's entertaining. You'll be entertained.
I'll definitely check it out. I haven't seen anything new myself. The most recent film, and I never really finished watching it, because it was on Netflix Instant. I watched Candyman: Farewell to the Flesh, so yes. The sequel. It's not. See, the thing about it is, I don't think it's as bad as people may feel as it is. Mm-hmm. I think little things about it annoy me. Like, I could do without the voiceover, because I think that's just distracting and annoying, and it doesn't contribute anything to the story. Mm-hmm. What works best with this is that Candyman, we finally get his backstory, like his full backstory. And, you know, if you're really paying attention, it does make sense.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Where he does, because you're like, how can he go from Chicago to New Orleans? It makes, you know, if you're listening, it totally has a nice flow to it. So I think I would recommend it for people who are fans of Candyman. You mm-hmm. may or may not like the film very, very easily and very understandably. But it's definitely something, if you're a completist, definitely check it out. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I finally like saw it with you know, with intenseness. Yeah. That's a word. I don't know if that's a word. But I'm glad I kind of, like, you know, was able to kind of watch it again as an older person and say, okay, this is, you know, I might even say that the sequel is better than the first one.
Oh, no.
Listen.
I'm sorry. Well, I mean, I guess I can understand your reasoning for it. I mean, I do like how they explained his backstory. But honestly, after seeing the second one, I could have just done without it. I would have rather there not even have been a sequel. And, you know, I think I'm just, I used to really, really like the, you know, the whole film Candyman. It used to scare me as a kid. But then as I grew up and I remember watching it, you know, when I was a little bit older, I kind of just got annoyed with the fact that, okay, because he was doing these, okay, going with the first one, he was doing these outrageous things to get his point across, you know? Killing people. It's like she didn't even do anything. She just stopped by to see how her friend was doing. You know, that happened. And then even with the sequel, it's just like, okay, I have to say this, okay, Ashley? I have to say it. Yet again, it's another white woman. Out of all the women in the world, like out of all the women in the entire universe. And it's like I don't see anything special about her.
No, we'll see. Okay, I think they did make a, I just saw this movie and I can't remember. But basically, it made less sense in the first one. It made a little bit more sense in the first one because that was his ancestor.
Right.
So
right.
He's, and if you think about it, I think there are sequels because it is based on a short story by Clive Barker. I think it's a short story.
Yeah, I heard
so,
that it was.
That's why, because they had material to work with to kind of expand on the mythology.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the reason, especially when you're watching the first one, like, why is he obsessed with these white folks? And yeah. Then like then you hear his backstory, and I'm like, oh, because his first kind of quote obsession or romance was with this white woman. So of course he's gonna chase white girls.
I mean that's fine, but it didn't work out the first time. So maybe you should try something new. I don't know. So I don't know. That's what I would do. But I mean, he just, it's like, he's just stalking her throughout the whole movie. And it's, I mean, I get that's what he does. You know, I mean, I'm not saying please stalk me, Candyman. No, don't. Thank you. But it's like, I don't know. That's why I was annoyed by the sequel, because it's just like, at first I'm like, okay, well, cool. A sequel, he's back. And because you know what? I didn't watch this one when I was a kid. I recently watched this one as well, maybe like 2 or 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had no idea that there was even a sequel, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's another one too, I think.
Oh, no.
I'm pretty sure that there is, because I think
no.
One of the girls is like a Baywatch girl or something like that. I don't know.
You see what I mean? It's just another one. And it's just like, okay, this is going to be watch there be a fourth one. There's going to be a fourth one. And he's still going to be after the same person.
I doubt it's going to be. I don't know. I don't know how many Candyman sequels there are. Now I'm curious.
Now I'm going to Google it. I'm going to do it right now. Let's see. Candyman.
Yeah, there's Farewell to the Flesh, and then there's Day of the Dead. with the chick. Hold on. What's her name? Donna D'Erica or something? And she's super white, super blonde,
you know,
too.
Super white. Yeah. Oh, my God. She is.
Because I remember, I've only seen bits and pieces of this movie. I've never seen it all the way through. Oh, the guy from Nightmare on Elm Street's in this.
Okay, now I'm curious and I have to watch it.
Yeah, now I'm gonna see it too. It's probably terrible, but
and that's okay. We can make fun of it. I like doing that. Love it. But yeah, I don't know. Like I really do like Tony Todd. I think that he's an awesome actor and everything.
For sure.
But yeah, part two though, I can't really speak on part three. I haven't seen it. But I mean, I'm looking forward to checking it out. Maybe it'll surprise us. Maybe it'll actually be so wonderful.
I don't know.
I'm just trying to be positive. But you know, one of my favorites, Tony Todd performances. Well, I have two actually. I really like him of course, in Candyman. He was great in Candyman. But I also liked him in the movie Hatchet. He was in, I think, was he in?
I have yet to finish that movie. Like, I've only seen the first one in, again, bits and pieces. And then every time I try to watch Hatchet 2, I fall asleep. What? It's that movie. I tried to watch while I was in bed and
fell asleep.
Nope. Every time. And I've attempted to watch it more than once, and I'm just like, there's something about Hatchet that just does not connect with me.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, I like it. I don't love it. I don't think it's a bad series. I think it definitely gets better. Well, I kind of just like the first one a lot. I thought the first one was hilarious. But maybe that's what the problem is. I mean, it is a comedy horror. It is a comedy horror, but I don't know. Well, the other movie that I like him in was in, I know that he was in Final Destination 2, but I like him more in Final Destination 5. Or was he in, no, he was in Final Destination, the first one and the second one.
Wasn't he in all of them?
I don't remember seeing him in the third one.
I feel like he's in,
maybe he was in the third one. You know what? He probably was in all of them. Like, yeah, I think he was in all of them. I don't know. But I just know my favorite one was part 5, actually. Mm-hmm. And I really like him in that one because, you know, I think I did this list before where, you know, like they're typical kind of like black characters that are out there. And he plays the, usually my title for it is the mysterious old person who knows everything. I mean, he's not that old, though, so I don't want to call him old. But he's like that mysterious person who knows everything. It's like, how do you know this? You know?
Yeah. No. That's definitely a trope that they play on a lot.
So. Yeah. I mean, I don't mind. It's entertaining. Like, remember that lady from Jeepers Creepers?
I've never seen Jeepers Creepers.
Oh, my God. It's one of those movies where I actually prefer the second one. I mean, I know so many people would disagree with me, but I prefer the second one over the first one. It definitely is like a unique storyline, so I think that you'll like it. But the second one, with the first one, it made no sense because Justin Long was in it and Gina Phillips, I think her name is. Mm-hmm. They're both in it. They're brothers and sisters, and they're taking a road trip to see their mom or their parents or something. And for some reason, they just decide to, like, follow this guy or this whatever it is, and they drop a body. This movie's old, so I can speak on it. But, yeah, he drops something down a chute, and he crawls down there and check it out. And she's like, well, why would you do that? I don't know. Whole thing happens. It's kind of like a creature. He's like a flesh-eating creature man and stuff. And plus, it's like, since I live in Florida, I actually got to go to, like, the filming location of, like, some of the parts during the movie. Even though some people say, oh, that's not the location. But whatever. That's the location. So, but that's another, it's a good movie if you ever get around to seeing it. But there is a mysterious old black woman who knows everything. And nobody knows how or why she knows this stuff. They never really explain it to us. She just knows it. So, and there's a part 2. Like I said, I prefer part 2 over the first one. It just seemed more realistic. Like a lot of characters in the film did things that I could see myself doing. Even though they were still screwed in the end. But that's okay. So yeah.
Yeah.
Just had to get that out. Okay, you know what? I think that we've been talking long enough.
Yeah, I think so too. We'll say, thank you for listening, and you can find me. My name is Ashley, but people know me as Graveyard Sister on Twitter. Follow the Tumblr page for Graveyard Shift Sisters. It's graveyardshiftsisters.tumblr.com. It's where you can find a catalog of black women in horror films and television. Graveyardshiftsisters.com is the main blog. Also, like the Facebook page, Graveyard Shift Sisters, facebook.com/graveyardshiftsisters. And Zena, where can everyone find you on social media?
Twitter, username Lovely Zena. And then as far as it goes with Facebook, facebook.com/realqueenofhorror. And you can also just go to realqueenofhorror.com. Thank you all for listening.
Bye.